Hi, I'm Sunny Dean.
And I'm Scott Drakeford.
And this is the Publishing Rodeo Podcast. In 2022, we both launched debut novels in the same genre with the same publisher in the same year. But despite having very similar starts, our books and subsequently each of our careers went in very different directions.
That pattern repeats itself throughout the industry over and over. Why do some books succeed while others seem to be dead on arrival?
In this podcast, we aim to answer those questions and many more, along with how to build and maintain an author career.
Everyone signing a contract deserves to know what they're really signing up for. In an industry that loves its secrets, we'll be sharing real details from real people. We'll cover the gamut of life as a Big Five published author, from agents to publishing contracts, finances, and more.
Welcome to this week's Publishing Rodeo. This week we have Nisha Tully. Have I said your name right?
Tully. Yeah, close. Tully. Yeah.
Okay, Nisha Tully. I've only seen it written down. ages ago in a Discord, actually. I'll cut this bit. It was called White Male Confidence, this Discord's got.
WMC, yeah. WMC.
The idea is that you like bring white male confidence to...
I actually have a rom-com coming out next year, and it's in an office rom-com, and she works at a company called WMC, and I'm waiting for the day when someone asks me, what does that stand for? And I'll be like, well, let me tell you.
That's awesome.
I'm not there anymore because increasingly I felt like I reached this point where I left a bunch of my Discords because I felt like it was a bit awkward. But anyway, when I met Nisha, I think you were still querying. And
yeah, that sounds about right.
And since then, like, everything has changed for you in a really positive way. Yeah. And I kind of feel like what happened with your career was like a microcosm of what was going on with romanticy in our genre. If you feel like introducing yourself and talking a bit about your writing journey and the kind of crazy story you had going into publication.
All right. How long do you want me to go for?
As long as you want. Yeah.
Yeah. As long as you want.
I'm afraid. Yeah. So I, like many people, started writing during the pandemic. Like, I worked professionally as a writer for many years. Like, I worked for magazines. I was working in marketing when the pandemic hit. I was working in tourism marketing when the pandemic hit, and I was at home for the, you know, my kids were at home. My husband wasn't traveling. Like, I had more time than I'd had in years. And I was like, you've always wanted to write a book and you're not getting any younger. So I like sat down that summer and I wrote the first book. And like, a fire was lit under me. And I think I just finished book 16 recently. Like, I just did not stop for 4 solid years. I have not stopped. And I thought I wanted to go trad first. So I like went through the whole querying thing and I got an agent pretty quickly. Like, I only queried for a few months the first time, which was nice. But then that book went on sub, and it went on sub for 18 of the longest months of my life. And in the meantime, I kept writing books, as they tell you, keep writing books. Right? So I kept writing books. And that first one was actually a YA fantasy romance that I started with, because I thought that's what I wanted to write first. And then I also wrote a rom-com, which then also went on sub. And then that one sat on sub for a year. And I kind of just like got sick of waiting. And I could tell that trad publishing was not interested in acquiring the kind of books I wanted to write. Like, that romanticy was taking off in indie. And I could see that that was happening. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to try and go indie for also try indie. So that's when I published a novella. And then I published one sort of standalone longer novel. And then I published Trial of the Sun Queen in 2022 in the fall. And it started to get good traction. And then basically like about 6 months later, right before the second book came out, it blew up on TikTok. TikTok. and like everything changed in that moment. I was starting to get, I was selling more books than I ever thought I would ever sell in my entire life. And I was starting to get like reached out from foreign publishers, a UK publisher reached out to me, and I was like, okay, like I knew there was another author the year before who had her series picked up for a 7-figure deal. And I was like, in the back of my head, I was like, well, it's kind of like, I still wanted the trad pub experience, but I ended up. And in the meantime, my first book actually sold. And my rom-com also sold at the end of 2021, both like within weeks of each other, because when it rains, it pours. So that was a 4-book series and a 3-book deal for my rom-coms. And then all of this started happening with Trial of the Sun Queen. And then I left my first agent because I just did not think she was the right person to take it to the next level. And it was very amicable. And she was just like, my agency refused to represent foreign rights for me. Like, they were happy to take the money for the ones that are, even though they were literally getting contacted about me and I was getting like actual offers, they were just like refused to do anything beyond just like sitting there and taking the money from those contracts. And I was like, well, you are not getting any of this. You have done nothing to help me here. So I refused.
That's so weird.
It was crazy. It was out. They thought it was indie books and it didn't count. And like, why would they waste their time with like stupid stuff? Right. Like, I think there was just like this snobbery of old school publishing people who did not see what was starting to happen on the indie side. Cause I feel like it was sort of like last year, it was really like the wave was starting to really crest. So I was just like, look, if you're not going to represent this stuff for me, like, I need to go find another agent. It was all very fine. So yeah, and I was just saying to Sunny that like I ended up querying for like 2.5 days next time. So it's so different when you like are coming with something published and it's like a completely different ballgame. So that was great. So then I, you know, ended up having lots of offers and I signed with Lauren at Lauren Spieler at Folio, and she has been great. And she immediately understood like what I wanted and was like, hit the ground running. And we put that book on, we took about a few weeks to sort everything with all my other contracts. I learned a lot about publishing in that month, like, and how, because I had competition clauses and option clauses in my other two contracts and how we were going to work around all of that. And then put the book on sub, it ended up going to auction, which was like crazy and incredible. And then had a few offers and we ended up signing with Forever, who was the same publisher who bought my rom-coms earlier. And I remember my agent was like, well, we're going to sub to your editor. And I'm like, but they don't really do fantasy. She's like, it's just polite. She's your editor. So we did. And it turned out they wanted to do fantasy because everybody wanted to get on the romanticy train. So they did it with me. And it actually worked out really nicely because they're all Hachette they're all from Hachette. So they like the competition clauses and all that stuff. They don't worry about those. And like, they all like, figure it out themselves because it's not like they're not really competing against each other in the same way. So then like Orbit UK picked up the UK rights and then Bookature has the other one. So they're all just sort of like work together now in ways. So and they republished them at lightning speed. Like, I mean, we signed the contract in June. They had them out by August, proving that publishing can move fast when they want to. When they want to. And the third book is coming out actually in less than a month now. And then the fourth one will come out in November. So the series will be finished this year, which is also like lightning speed. And they're trying to kill me with edits, but it's fine. I'm almost there.
So just to recap, so I understand, you had a couple other series contracted, Trad, a rom-com and something else. But at the same time, you self-published this romanticy, Trial of the Sun Queen. I don't know if it was the same title before. And then after it had been self-published for a while, then you took it out with a new agent.
When it started getting like traction and I started getting like reached out by publishers, I was like, and I knew that some publishers had picked up indie series that had done well. So that was sort of like where I was going with that. And we went back and forth and we're like, if it's not this, then, you know, there's more and more print only deals happening with indies too. Like, that was another avenue we were going to look at because I wanted the distribution, obviously. Like, I mean, that's the main purpose of working with a big publisher is the distribution. And because, like, to be frank, like, I was in Kindle Unlimited, I was making more money than I've ever made in my life, that it had to be like a sweet enough deal to be like, yeah, okay, I'm going to hand these rights over to you now. And I mean, ultimately maybe I would have made more by keeping them myself, but I wanted the TradPub experience. I wanted the distribution. I wanted all the like, and now they're in every Target in the United States. Like, I couldn't have done that on my own. Right. Like, that's amazing to have my book in every Target in the US. Right. So,
I mean, go ahead. Sorry, Sunny.
Oh, I was going to say, I think you're being very modest, Nisha. I mean, can I mention your deal size? Because I know you've shared it publicly, but yeah. So, I mean, Trial of the Sun Queen, it sold for 7 figures in the States and 6 figures. Is that in the
Yeah, there was a few six-figure UK foreign deals. We're up to like 15 countries, I think, now.
So
it was like beyond my wildest. Like, I still can't believe it.
And you were still making more indie than you've made on those deals.
Well, like over time, like KU can be pretty lucrative when you hit. You know, it's the market is there. I mean, the readers are there. It can't, like, over the years, like, not right at that moment, I wasn't, but I think if we looked at it, but you trade off other things, right? Like, there's the trade-off. I wanted to, to me, it felt like the opportunity to sort of establish myself and, you know, gain a new audience I wouldn't get, because certain people don't read indie books. Like, the people who just casually go to the bookstore on the weekend aren't reading indie books, right? They buy books in a bookstore, and you can't get in front of them without being in that bookstore.
I'm assuming that because we're talking about this contract size, that your other contracts were not that same size.
They're not even close.
Okay.
Take a few zeros off, Scott. Take a few zeros off.
Not even close.
So I'm just trying to step through this. So I'm interested to hear about, you know, you mentioned taking off on TikTok and you know, you saw Romantasy becoming popular in indie circles, et cetera. So it seems like you went about this very strategically and you did some very smart things to get yourself in a position for this, you know, large deal. Do you have more to say there about what worked for you, or are those going to remain trade secrets?
No, not at all. I mean, I already loved Romantasy. Like, I didn't choose Romantasy because it was getting popular. Like, that's what I wanted to write. Mm-hmm. And actually, while I was on the sub, I realized I did not want to write YA. I wanted to write adults. Like, I wanted to go spicier. I wanted to write spicier. I wanted to write more adult. Like, you just, like, you have way more freedom writing adult than you do YA. That's not to say I don't want to write YA ever, but at the moment I decided to switch over. Yeah. And, I mean, I think partly it was strategy. Like, you know, people will be like, oh, you're so lucky you write in a genre that is popular. I'm like, yeah, but I'm also choosing to, there's lots of genres that are popular. Like, it was a choice to pursue Romantasy at the moment that I did. And recognizing, right. And recognizing where, like, I don't know. It was a hunch that these books, like, you look at like Sarah J. Maas and like Jennifer Armour, like, they were so popular. There was just no way that eventually that wouldn't, like, you know, find its way onto the other side. Like, just didn't seem possible to me that they could keep ignoring it forever. Because, you know, sometimes TradPub can be slow on the uptake. But, and then ultimately, like, I think the book itself was where I, you know, people always like, I feel like I wanted to write something that was familiar, but not the same. Yeah. Right? Like, there was, I have no problems writing to market. And I know some people like to scoff at that. But, like, to me, that was part, like, I wrote a to market book consciously on purpose. Yeah. Following the tropes that I know people love in this genre, that I love in the genre, because I read it heavily. And I think it made, you know, as part of the difference, like, I think it felt familiar, but I like to think I gave it my own voice to it. And I only write brown girls as my heroines, as my FMCs, which I think sort of sets me apart a little bit in the genre, especially amongst the top sellers. And, you know, as with most genres, but and I think that also sort of, I don't know, I think a lot of people, like when I get messages from readers who are just like, I've never seen a book like this with someone who looks like me in this. And it's just like, oh, I get so like caught up, like choked up whenever I get those messages. But and I will fully acknowledge that I was in the right place in the right time with the right thing just when everyone, right? Like I knew that, but like I saw it happen to someone else. And that's when I was like, okay, I'm going to try and do this too. So
yeah, that's amazing. Yep.
No, I think that makes a lot of sense. And just as a very quick, mild detour, I think people get sniffy about the kind of right-to-market approach because they're misunderstanding that people come to publishing for different things. Like, there's a discussion on Absolute Right, and I did a short article for a blog once on it, but it was about the different types of readers that you get. So you get broadly like, projectionist readers, escapist readers, and communion readers. So projectionists are like people who want to see themselves in the story. So like in video games, the hero fantasy, you want to pretend that you kind of are the hero. Escapists are more like people wanting to just forget about reality. And then communion readers are more like they're engaging with the text and they want to essentially have a conversation with the author through their art, and that, you know, that like those are very rough groups, right? And people are usually mixed with the different ones, but I think authors are kind of in that camp as well. And that for me, like I think I'm more like you. Like for me, writing is about being a conversation, and I want to talk to as many people as possible, and that means writing a book that's accessible to many people. And I don't have it in me to like be ashamed of that anymore, because I think like if that's your goal, like if then that is how you go about it. If your goal is like I want to make my art and right. it's an expression of myself, like that's fine, there's nothing wrong with that, but it does mean that you're prioritizing more things about self-expression over mm-hmm. conversation, if that makes mm-hmm. sense. So yeah. anyway,
and I think it's sort of like you have to be realistic. Like if you're out there going, I'm writing this book that no one's going to get and no one's going to understand, and it's so weird and so out there, and then they turn around and be like, why is no one buying my book? Well, yeah, you can't have it both ways, right? Like it just
no, and people do want yeah. both ways. I think everyone wants to be the weird little writer who's very weird, but everyone also simultaneously loves them, and it's like, well, these things are kind of
yeah and like I think ultimately readers say they want something different, but I don't think most of them actually do. Like I think ultimately we like what we're comfortable with, and we gravitate to the same kinds of things because that's what we like and that's what we love, and it's yeah. hard to get people to break out of that.
Yeah. You know, I shouldn't say liars. I should say that when readers say they want something different, they mean different in like, they don't think of different the way writers think of different. They right. mean like a different right. variation. Yeah.
And I can contrast this very vividly with my other series, which is actually based on South Asian world building completely. Like it's very different. Like Trial of the Sun Queen is a completely European style aesthetic, despite the fact that I have a brown girl in the heroine role. I didn't care. I'm not trying to be historically accurate or anything like that. But my other series has South Asian world building, so I think the book feels quite different compared to what's a lot of is out there. But it's definitely a harder sell. Like it has been much harder sell for people because it doesn't have vampires or fae or any of the usual things like that people are used to, you know. And therefore, it's harder to pitch. It's harder to market, and it is different. But it doesn't do as well as the other one because I think it's. Sometimes maybe too different. I don't know. Like it's yeah. it's not as familiar for people. And people are like, oh, it was confusing because I use South Asian terms for things. Well, and the names, but you all are fine with Daenerys Targaryen is her seven names until it's attached to brown people, right? So it's just like, yeah.
So yeah. What were you doing on TikTok? You know, you mentioned like you took off on TikTok. Is that something you were working towards, or was it like a kind of Olivia Blake happy accident?
Well, it was really someone else's video. I was active on TikTok for a while. You know, I had a couple of videos do fairly well there, but it was really someone else's video that made the big difference, which is not surprising, right? Like to me, it was same sort of, I was trying to get the book into as many hands as possible, whether that was through advertising, whether that was through TikTok, whether that was just giving out arcs. Like it was just, I just felt like, as long as I could hit enough people that like someone was going to like this. So it was sort of my, I did a big PR campaign with a book box. Like I sent out books, physical books to a bunch of influencers. I worked with a company who did that. And that was really to what moved the needle for me. Like it hit the right person, like, a few of the right people who then, you know, had big audiences and who liked it and enjoyed it. And people obviously trust the opinions of others more so than they do the author themselves saying this book is great, read this book. But yeah. And I mean, I'm on TikTok. I have such a love-hate relationship with it. I actually have an assistant who does all of my videos now because I feel like I can't not do it. So I just make it as painless for myself as possible by going on there very infrequently at this point. I prefer Instagram at this point. I feel I have a more cohesive audience on Instagram. I feel like I can talk to my audience on Instagram more. And that's where I spend most of my social media effort these days.
Well, this is something that we might want to edit out just for boring purposes, but I'm actually curious to know what company did those book boxes for you, because that's really cool. And I'm interested to hear like how many arcs you sent out, what advertising you did, etc., because that's a little bit foreign to me.
Yeah, we don't have to edit out. The company's called NerdFam, and the owner is Rachel Skye, and she's become very popular with the genre now. Like she gets results, which, yeah. you know, a lot of people in indie publishing are there just to take your money. And you have to be very careful about who you give it to, because most people cannot deliver on the promises. True. She did. She does. Yep. So we did 50 physical boxes with a hardcover and some art in it. And then they actually got an envelope that had a QR code with a digital art to the second book, because it was about to release. And it was it was art inside the envelope that was sort of a spoiler for the book. So it said, you can't open this until you read the book. And people really liked that. Like, they showed that constantly. So that was great. And then we actually had a couple hundred more people sign up for them. So we ended up giving digital arts to all of them. So that was, I don't know, probably like 300 something together when all was said and done. And then advertising, I dabbled in Amazon ads, which worked quite well for me. And I dabbled in Facebook ads, which did nothing. I just burned a whole lot of money for me. So that was, it's interesting how different, I guess that's not where my audience is. I think my audience tends a little bit younger. I don't think they're using Facebook anymore. And Amazon ads are great because, like, people are there to buy books, and you know, versus Facebook or another platform, they're not necessarily there to buy a book. You didn't have to convince them they want a book and then get them over to Amazon, et cetera, et cetera. So I took a course on Amazon ads, and I felt that those did pretty well for me. I mean, I canceled, I stopped doing all of that once the publisher picked it up, because that was not my job anymore. So that was actually really nice, because, like, that takes a lot of, it's a lot of time to monitor them and like adjust them and tweak them. And obviously it costs lots of money. And so, like, I mean, that was another aspect of, like, moving to a trad publisher, was like, now I'm not responsible solely for advertising. Like, I still do my part. I still send out my newsletters. I still do my social media, but I'm not doing ads and that kind of thing. And yeah, those were sort of the main things that I did in terms of paid and, you know, and promotional type things.
Yeah, I wondered, because a mutual friend of ours, Shaylin, was telling us.
Shaylin is my friend too.
I think she's friends with everybody because she's freaking awesome. It's hard to imagine somebody not liking her. But she mentioned a few months ago, or I don't remember when it is. My brain doesn't keep track of time anymore. But that Amazon ads were the way to go, or at the very least, they were very popular in romance and romanticy indie circles. And that some of the big releases will spend like thousands or even tens of thousands of dollars in ads on just that first launch week to get their book up into the, you know, top 50, top 20, whatever it is that people pay attention to, just to kind of like establish it as a book in, you know, that people should be watching. Have you seen much of that?
Yeah. I mean, getting in the top in the Amazon algorithm is key in the first like 90 days when you publish. Mm-hmm. I mean, people always focus on number of reviews, but like Amazon doesn't care how many reviews they have. They care how many books you sell. Like that's who they are showing. Like that's who the algorithm is showing, is how, when people are buying the book, not reviewing the book. And I did not spend that kind of money, because I didn't end up sort of needing to do that at the time of my last that release. But it's something I would definitely consider. Like, people get scared of spending lots of money. I get that, but you don't do it all in the first day. You work your way up to it. And when you're making, you know, six figures a month, you can spend $10,000 an ad. That's reasonable, right? Like that's I ended up calculating it, because I was curious. I spent 10% of what I was making on ads at that point. Like that's, it was only 10%, like to make, you know, the extra bit, like that's well worth it to me. Like
that's an incredible ROI. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it helped, the TikTok factor helped.
Sure.
Absolutely. And the fact that like the problem with marketing and books is you can't really gate, there's so much organic traffic and you are not the end conversion. Like you don't know which thing click, you know, they come to Amazon, they don't come to your website unless you're selling direct. And so it's hard to see like what specific thing was the driving factor. But because at that point I had so much organic stuff coming from user content, it sort of all just worked together really well.
Sure. Yeah, so, totally makes sense.
I've got a question. You don't have to answer it, but I was just curious. You know, what were you making as an indie, if that's okay to ask?
So my big month in April of when my second book came out, like that month I made well over 100,000, like well into six figures.
Okay. That's impressive.
because and that was a release month, right? Like that's of course bumps it up. And I only had two books in the series at that point. And of course, the part of the reason you write longer series as an indie is because each book bumps it up a little bit more. So when the third one comes out, my publisher actually kept them in Kindle Unlimited because that's where so many people found them. And they, of course, are not limited to just Amazon like indies are. So that's actually another benefit of going with the publisher because they can put them everywhere versus indies are limited only to Amazon if you're in KU. Like you're not allowed to publish it, an ebook anywhere else, which is a point of contention. But yeah, no, it was, it's, I think you'd be shocked at how much some of those top people in the top 100 of Amazon are making. Like,
so did you, I mean, so Trad was really slow to get on this train. I mean, they're all aboard the Round to See train now. Like I'm hearing from debut friends that, you know, like the big debut Slack groups with like four people who aren't Romantasy. But what, why do you think it took them so long? Do you think there was any particular thing that kicked it off? Because it felt like 1 minute we were all talking about how it was a huge genre in indie and Trad was just oblivious to it. And the next minute it felt like everybody was acquiring it.
I don't know why. I feel like Trad takes forever with everything. Like they just sort of seem slow in the market needed things. I think they needed the proof of success. And then when they saw they were already behind, that's when they like started going to indies and were like, well, we'll take your book and we'll give you money for it. And right. Like that way they didn't have to acquire and edit and do all of the stuff. They already knew that these books were being read by people. All they had to do was like slap their logo on it. Like they didn't even change my covers, like nothing. Like I already had all four covers. Like none of that got changed. They didn't even edit those. They did not even do a change one single word. They just like repackaged them with their logo and put them out. Right. So I think there's sort of that lower barrier to entry for them there. Now I feel like, I know my agent was saying, she's like, I feel like the interest in that is slowing down a little bit only because they come with these big price tags and they can only do that so much. And that the future, like I think is that indie's getting Trad deals for new books who want to, have the Trad experience, but don't want to give up their, you know, their indie stuff and want to keep those royalties coming and that kind of stuff. So I imagine that that will be the future. And I know lots of people are getting reached out to by publishers who have indie series and are like, I like your voice and we would love to hear something new from you. And people are always like, I would never go Trad, but then Trad comes knocking and they always change their tune because it's nice. It's validating, right? It is.
And I think, I don't know, I always have mixed feelings on it because on the one hand, I feel like it's a good situation to be in where the author has the kind of power in that balance, that dynamic. But on the other hand, there's a part of me that's like, but publishers are just like,
I know.
How do you say? You're training publishers to get used to the fact they don't have to do anything.
Right. And because... and people have said that. They're like, well, you did all the work. And then they just swooped in and like,
yeah.
But I find that rhetoric a little bit annoying because like I did consider all the aspects. Like I didn't just do this blindly, right? Like I considered all the pros and cons. And like, I think in general, if anyone is writing a book and they want to know about publishing, like you have, what is your goal? Like, what do you want? Like that to me is the like first question everyone should ask themselves. Like, do you just want to write a book that gets published and a few people read it? Do you want to be write full time? Do you want to make $1 million? Right? Like, what is your goal? Everything is going to inform how you approach what you write and how you publish, depending on what it is you want from it.
Yeah.
And like, I wanted a big Trad deal. Like that was, that was when I started. I wanted a big Trad deal. So like other people might look at me and be like, you're an idiot for giving up your rights to this publisher. But that's what I wanted. Like it doesn't matter. Yeah. I know what I gave up and I know what I got in exchange for those things. So it is a little bit, and what I do feel for is the people sitting in the slush pile who are not getting acknowledged because that publisher went to an already successful indie author and was like, hey, we have, right? Like I definitely feel for those people. But I mean, it's still mostly people, you know, like this is still a small percentage of the books that are getting published. Like this is not overtaking publishing or anything.
No. I mean, do you think, because I feel like Romantasy is here to stay. Do you think that it will kind of stay or wax or wane or change in the coming years?
I mean, I hope it stays forever.
Yeah.
But I do. I think it's got a lot of legs. I mean, the Fourth Wing effect, I mean, people are just discovering it now. Because of Fourth Wing, like it's bigger than it's ever been. Like last year, some people never had heard of Romantasy until they picked up Fourth Wing. And now they're like, And like I always say, like, no one ever read a book and was like, I love that. I never want to read anything like it again, right? Like, the minute you love something, you start looking for more things like it, right? So I think this is just the beginning of the wave, yeah. Personally. I hope so. I hope it lasts like 20 more years. But
yeah,
it feels like when YA kind of broke out, because, you know, YA wasn't a thing when we right. were young people.
Right.
Long ago. But it kind of exploded, and then suddenly YA was this huge thing. And for a while it did have like a bit of a bubble. It did kind of,
yeah.
I guess, deflate a bit, but it's not going away. It's just slightly
right.
less.
There may be a bit of a course maybe. Correct in yeah. the same way, right? Where we yes, like had this correct. Thing, but it's not going to go. Just yeah, YA is not going away, and YA fantasy is not going away. Like, it's just as popular yeah. as it's always been, right? So yeah, I don't
still
think
teenagers.
It's going, yeah. And I think like romanticism is like special because it's such a merging of two genres that people are really passionate about
yeah.
and are like super into it. And then you combine like a world-ending romance with like world-ending stakes, and it all like, I just, that's why I love it. It's just like, there's so much going on.
Well, it does feel like more of a category like YA than it does a fad, like, you know,
right.
retellings or vampires or whatever
right,
other
right. Yeah,
whatever
yeah.
other shit publishing jumps on now and then.
I feel like my prediction is dark romance is going to be the thing, because my publisher also just bought a stalker romance, an indie stalker romance, for seven figures, and I think that's where they're going next, because that is also really big in indie. I think that's where we're going next.
Stalker romance for seven figures, good lord. I mean, I guess You was very popular, right? I didn't read it, but I watched.
Well, that wasn't a romance because it doesn't have a happy ending. But
yeah, okay,
like like Haunting Adeline is the big one. Like, it's sold millions of copies. Like, it's, I'm telling you, it's the next thing.
Clay's gonna be so happy to hear that.
Yeah, right. I guess Phantom of the Opera. I don't know. I don't actually remember how that ends. I think I
no,
fell
that's
asleep
tragedy.
When I watched it.
That's a tragedy.
That does not qualify because the morally gray, the morally black one does not get the girl, so that doesn't qualify either.
Yeah, Phantom of the Opera is essentially a retelling of The Hunchback of Notre Dame, but with music, so it has the same plot line.
Yeah.
Yeah, I look, I mean, no shade to romance, romanticy, etc., but I think for me personally, stalker romance is probably one step over the line.
Hey, everyone has different things to like.
I know. Sorry, Scott. I'm saving you from fans, right? You can't yuck someone else's yum. They will crucify
you. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's fine.
Trust me, I'm already planning my pen name for it.
I love that. I love that so much. That's
like
great.
Dealing with
that's
fans.
Fantastic.
Because, you know, fans are very passionate fantasy, and fans are very passionate romance.
They are.
So I would imagine when they clash.
They are. They're like, so I was just at a PolyCon a week and a half ago in DC, like, which is Jennifer Armentrout's big event. This is my first time doing a big signing like that. And the people, like, wow, that was intense. Like, people are so, like, wonderful. Like, it was amazing. Like, it was very good for the ego, I will say that. But there was a lot of extroverting for this introvert, and I was like, my whole body was aching by the end of the day. But people were so excited. Like, they were just so genuinely like thrilled to see you and thrilled to meet you and like get a signature and like take a picture. Like, it was just, it was so much fun. And yeah, I get so many impassioned messages, and like, yeah, people are really, really into it.
That really scares me. Is that terrible to say? Like, I was watching Victoria Aveyard at her event, because I did like the interview for her. And she had people like ask her to name their unborn child, like in the signing queue, and just, or like, oh, can you write this phrase and your signature on this piece of paper? Because then they're going to go and get her handwriting like tattooed on them. And I was just like, holy shit.
Oh my goodness.
I would have a breakdown from other people's emotional.
I love it. I love interacting with my readers. I'm actually like, I love that part. Like, and most people are really nice. Obviously, there's always people who will tag you in mean reviews, but the block button has become my friend, and I don't feel bad about that anymore. But I love it. I think it's so much fun. I have a few more signings this year, and
I wish you all the signing joy. I think that's the point. Watching her, where I thought I really am very hermity, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of us are introverts, and it's sort of like out of our comfort zone. But as long as I don't have to like make friends or like small talk, Like, as long as I have to network with people I don't know, I'm fine.
Yeah, just a really quick question on scheduling. So are you having all four books released in a year? Because that's very unusual for trad, isn't it?
Yeah,
well, so the first two were already published. And then when they acquired them, it was like May of last year, and the contracts were signed like in June. And then they republished them in August of last year. And then I was writing the third book at the time, and I handed that in earlier this year. And yeah, they had planned to, they're publishing that one in June, on June 4th, so less than a month from now. And now currently I just handed in the fourth book like last week. And we just have copy edits left to do with the plan of getting it out in November. It is super fast. Like I don't know. They were like, we don't want to lose the momentum. Everyone's excited about it right now. We want to get it out. I think in previous deals like this, there had been that where there was a big lag and then sort of the interest mm-hmm. peters out because it's just like, well, now people are waiting. Even like yeah. It'll be over a year between the second and third book, which for indie is quite a long time. You know, for trad, that's normal, but I mean, in fact, that's quick for trad, but, I wish it hadn't taken so long. At first they were going to do it earlier in the year when I had first originally planned to publish the third book, but, I am glad the last one is coming quickly and that it will just be done. Cause I've loved the series. I cried 100 times writing the last book, but I'm also ready to move on to the next thing.
Yeah, so what is coming next, if I can ask that really quickly?
Yeah, so I mean, I have my other series as well. The last two books will come out in October and early next year. And then my rom-com is the next sort of official thing next summer. We just started talking about the cover for that. Like sometimes I completely forget that I've got a whole series of rom-coms coming up. They recently are like, we got to start talking about the cover. I was like, okay, great. So one's called Not Suitable for Work. And yeah, it's a workplace romance based on like she's an engineer because that's what I was once upon a time. So there's some real life experiences of being a woman of color working in a very male dominated field. So mm-hmm. that was really fun. I actually personally think it's still my best book. So I'm super excited for people to read it. Although I wrote it so long ago now that I feel like I'm going to read it and be like, oh my God, this whole thing needs to be rewritten. But
Scott's an engineer or was once upon a time.
Oh yeah. I feel like that's
I was
recovering engineers in the author world.
Yeah. Yeah. What kind of engineering did you do?
I did chemical engineering and cool. I worked for a cement and concrete company. Mm-hmm. And which is how I ended up living in Winnipeg where I am now. And I was like, Winnipeg's sort of a small little town city in the middle of Canada where there's nothing around. And I was like, you want me to move where? And then I met my husband and then we had some kids and now it's been like, I don't know, 16, 17 years. So yeah, I guess this is home now.
That's awesome.
If you don't have further questions, Scott, I was going to say this is the part of the podcast where I usually ask the guests basically for like a pet peeve or the smallest hill you'd be willing to die on. So stuff that's featured has been like JT telling us that he thinks Kelvin should be the most common unit, you know, of temperature measurement or Katrina, her episode's not aired yet, basically saying that she thinks that, you know, no amount of coffee is too much or if I ever do it, I'll one day expound on why lasagna should be made of pancakes, not pasta, that kind of thing. So
pancakes,
you feel like.
Now yeah. I want to know what that's about. What is the smallest hill I will die on? Oh my God. Okay. Can it be writing related? Because I remember
anything,
one time.
Yeah.
Of course.
I saw a video from some guy who was insisting that you should not describe what people look like in their books. Oh. And I was like, what? Especially when you're writing romance, like the whole point of your physical attraction is the first thing. Like, give me a break. And I remember I tweeted something about that and it ended up getting like thousands of whatever. People were like, that's crazy. And the other one too, in the similar vein, is that love interest should never have long hair. And I will die on that hill. Yeah, they were like, stop making your men with long hair. I'm like, I will make them stop making them with men long hair when you cut off my left arm. Like,
I think some of that comes from litfic, the whole, oh, I didn't describe my character, I just described the color of her hat once, and it's
right.
like, Okay.
And well. I feel like that's a little problematic too when we are talking about diversity in publishing, right? And that if you don't describe them, then people will assume they're white. Like they're that's what they will assume. Even if you are a person of color, you will often assume they are white because that is how we've been conditioned to do so. So if you don't say it, then we are just all defaulting to a certain thing over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And I'm just really nosy and I want to know what they look like.
Right. I want to know. I want to know everything. I love describing clothing like that. To me, I love describing clothing. I've always been big into fashion and and I feel very much like there was a sort of a, used to be a kind of thing where the heroine always had to eschew anything feminine. Like she, you know, she couldn't wear makeup or fancy, like she had to only be like against anything too feminine to be a good character. And I hated that. So like, I very much have been conscious about like, if she doesn't like dresses, it's not because she thinks those are dumb and for girls, it's, you know, for a good reason. Like in one, she's like, she just feels like she lived in prison and she doesn't deserve the pretty dresses, right? Like an actual reason, not just that things that women enjoy are not important. Like you can wield a sword and be a badass and also wear pretty dresses. Like I will die on that. Here we go. There's another hill I will die on.
No, that's fine. There are many.
You can just keep going if you want.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've probably got a lot of them. Yeah.
No, thank you. That was amazing. And can you also plug yourself as well? It's just so people know where to find you, where to go and read spicy brown girl romantasy books.
Romantasy. My website is nishajtuli.com. You can find me as Nisha JT Writes on pretty much every platform. And yeah, that's the best place to find me. And I don't go on Twitter anymore, but I shit talk on Threads a lot instead now. I always think I'm like shit talking a bit too much, but when I was at a Polycon, I had like numerous people be like, I love following you on Threads. And I was like, okay, I guess I'm not shit posting enough. So there
we go. Yeah. I've a lot of people are leaving Twitter, which is going to be a whole thing. Hopefully.
No,
we're talking to someone. It's just bad.
I miss the, like, I do miss the knowledge that like, I learned so much from querying Twitter in my query days. Like I wouldn't have known so many things that I know now if it hadn't been for writing Twitter, and it's a shame that that is gone now.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. But yeah, it's not functioning very well.
No. And I just like, I cannot stand that person, and I just don't want to have anything to do with anything he touches. Not that the other billionaires are any better, but he seems to be just the worst of the lot at the moment.
You've been listening to the Publishing Radio Podcast with Sunny Dean and Scott Drakeford. Tune in next time for more in-depth discussion on everything publishing industry. See you later.